Hello, listeners. Welcome to our summer series spectacular. If you're fans of any of these podcasts, then you know we've been releasing some special episodes over on our Patreon. And unfortunately, we have not gotten the response that we had hoped. So we have discontinued our Patreons for now, but would like these episodes to be enjoyed by a larger audience. I want to start by apologizing to the people who did pay a few dollars to get these exclusive episodes when they were exclusive. Your generosity and support is still very appreciated, and hopefully in the future we will offer some more exclusive episodes over there and see if we can't get a few more supporters to join you over on that special feed. But until then, we're going to be releasing these special episodes right here, right now, and all summer long. On the Time Pop feed, we have some what we call time travel-ish movies. Things that are kind of, you know, maybe time-altering, mind-bending, reality-fuckery kinds of movies that I think you will enjoy on this main feed, even if they don't fall directly into our time travel purview. I may or may not have used that word properly. Whatever. For our Thank the Light audience, because there's only so much Wheel of Time content out there. Over there on the Patreon, we were experimenting with some other fantasy movies. So hopefully you're just a fan of Justin, Jeremy, and Desmond talking about stuff. So we're going to have some fantasy film discussions on the Thank the Light feed. And on the Movies R Us feed, apologies. We're going to take a little bit of a break from official Movies R Us releases just because we got really busy. You know, we knew this summer was going to be a little bit busy. We were doing our best to get caught up. And Desmond is moving. Justin is probably going to be moving. And Jeremy doesn't want to do the podcast by himself. So we're going to, again, hopefully you're just fans of us and what we talk about. And even if it is not an official toy-related product, hopefully you will enjoy us talking about some fantasy movies over there as well, just because our voices are beautiful. I hope you enjoy these special episodes. If you're only subscribing to Time Pop, why don't you subscribe to Movies R Us and or Thank the Light so you can get some other exclusive movie content. If you just like to hear us talking about films, it's going to be a great summer. We will definitely be back with new content. We have some very exciting things we're going to put into motion for Thank the Light. Movies R Us is just going to be back in full effect later this summer. We're liking what we're doing over there. We have a lot of fun movies to talk about. And if you're a Time Pop fan and you like listening to Scott and I just talk about weird, mind-bending movies, let us know at timepoppod@gmail.com. That is timepoppod@gmail.com. If you're enjoying this, us expanding our definition of Time Pop movies, and we may put more of these types of movies on this feed in the future. If you're a Movies R Us fan, just let us know when we get back to our official Movies R Us. Let us know some movies you want us to move to the top of our list. That is moviesruspod@gmail.com. That is moviesruspod@gmail.com. And if you're a Thank the Light fan, Wheel of Time fan, as you know, the show is getting put off. So we're trying to figure out the best way to discuss the books. Again, we've got some exciting things that we're going to do there to try to hype up those book discussions as we wait for more Wheel of Time episodes to get back to Amazon Prime. And if you enjoy listening to us talk about fantasy movies, maybe we can squeeze one of these in here and there just to spice it up as we wait for Rafe Judikins to get those episodes out to us. And whatever feed you're listening to, send us a message. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, because these shows are nothing without you. So if, you know, we're not going to listen to all your suggestions, but if you want to sheepdog us in a direction that makes us more fun to listen to and maybe bring more people into the fold, we would love to hear from you. ThankTheLight@gmail.com, TimePopPod@gmail.com, MoviesRUsPod@gmail.com. That is movies, the letter R, us, pod@gmail.com. Enjoy. Scott. Motherfucking Scott. I got Madonna's big dick coming out of my left ear. Toby the Jack, I don't know what, coming out of my right. Yes.
Look how considerate I am.
Yeah.
Let's take a look at things that matter first.
Everyone out there, I'm going to let you figure out why Scott needs to lay out a towel while he records a live.
Oh, is this going in already? I thought this was pre-talk.
Oh, I'm always recording, buddy.
Don't watch
always.
What you say on Desmond. You never know. I can't do my rants. All right, so this feels good for us. This feels nice.
This feels great. This feels really nice.
All right, I'm going to stop sharing, and let's talk about things that matter.
What's your timeline today? I know we can't talk forever, but what's your heart out?
It's not hard. It's just I got a lot of things to do.
What's your semi-soft out?
It's a half check.
If we go a little over, we're not screwed. But, you know, these are hard-paying patrons, Scott. This is for our...
So interesting that you say this is for the Patreon, because this actually... Okay.
Okay, let's start at the beginning. First off, Scott, give me a beat. Thank you, Brendan. Brendan brought this to us, and I just kind of, he put this in his time travel adjacent list, and this movie doesn't show up on too many time travel lists. Like, I'm constantly looking for top 10s.
I did see it. I saw it on some lists. Not top 10s, but...
Yeah, maybe that's why. Maybe I finally did deep dive.
Wow, dangle, this is taking a while to say
Dirk
this.
Diggler. Yeah. And I did find it down the list of Barry's.
Yeah, Barry.
Like, this was the point. So I remember I was kind of putting together my own timeline. And this one really jumped out at me. Because every movie on Brendan's list, I was like, yeah, it's on our list. We'll get to it. Yeah, it's on our list. We'll get to it.
This was on my list in the back of my mind. But time travel is not the focus. It's like time travel exists, but it's not what the film's about, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I even like last minute, because once I realized I was like, okay, I think we can do this for the show. I quit researching just because I just wanted to watch it.
Yeah.
And then right before I pressed play last night, I was like, okay, before I waste my time watching a movie we can't talk about, let me research one more time. And I saw the word time travel appear in the synopsis. So I was like, all right, let's do it. And so we are talking about Midnight in Paris from 2011, rated PG-13, 94 minutes, right? Ooh. In Desmond's sweet spot. And you guys, I'm going to take a deep breath. I'm going to see if I can get through all of this. Starring Owen Wilson, Rachel McAdams, Kathy Bates, Kurt Fuller, Mimi Kennedy, Michael Sheen. Where's some of the other hard hitters down here? Allison Pill, her face is so recognizable. Like yeah. Her name doesn't jump out at me. Tom Hiddleston.
Oh, he's a two-timer.
Oh, yes. Marion Cotillard. Andrew Brody.
Adrian Brody is also a two-timer.
Is he?
The Jacket.
Oh, The Jacket. Yes. Is McAdams?
Oh,
Rachel?
Oh my God, she's a three-timer.
Is she a three-timer?
She's got the what's the redheaded one? She's got the time traveler's wife.
Yes.
And the one where he squeezes his hand, the redheaded guy, where he, what's it, in time?
Yeah, the guy who travels.
Next time, whatever.
Through the closet.
And now she's got this. She's a three-timers.
Wow.
Club. That's elite. Do we have any other three-timers?
We do. I don't want to look it up. My computer's being kind of a butthole right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, we just dug up another three-timer. Great cast. I don't want to dwell on Woody Allen too much because he's a douchebag, but we're gonna talk about him as an artist for a minute.
Yeah, we're not talking about his personal life.
I just assumed, like, because he can write his own ticket. And so I just assumed most directors who can write their own ticket, most of his movies are 2.5 hours long.
No, this is back in the day when we did, before the Avengers came, that wasn't the case. Before Interstellar came along.
Brendan, Interstellar, Do it. Just keep watching it. Tell it. It wins.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I did. I was like, okay, this must be a one-off because this movie does feel like it's a little chopped and screwed. Like maybe it was the distribution company was like, nah, this is weird.
What? Do you know that this is Woody Allen's highest grossing film out of all of his movies?
I guess I believe that because it's
people just loved it. It just
And it captures a different audience. There's kind of sci-fi fans probably run across this and be like, oh, I should probably check.
Well,
this
Annie
out.
Hall and Manhattan are the biggest ones, but it's debatable. Like, I don't know how much movie theaters cost. Like, is it with inflation? Do they factor that in? Debatable.
I don't know. I mean, this wasn't that long ago. So,
yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. People are paying $14 a ticket.
I don't know if they count that in. But anyway, it's labeled as like, it's not considered his like best film by far, but it's his most highly successful for whatever. I mean, it's, you know, it's romantic. It's cute. It's a traditional, this is a Woody Allen film. People walk around, they have some intellectual conversations about life and adultery and what does it all mean? And in the end, they kind of go up with stuff, but not, it's about the pondering maybe.
And you can tell like Woody Allen, I think he wrote this assuming he would play the Owen Wilson role.
Most of his films has someone playing, like now as he doesn't play himself anymore, right? He had Jason Biggs has played him now. Owen Wilson has played him. I think some of the other like neurotic-y Hollywood. I don't know if Michael Cera's ever played him, but I'd be surprised if he didn't, you know, but like that's, you know, he knows he can't play them anymore.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to show the old guy. and luckily, and sometimes they overplay the neurotic to be like him. And I think Owen Wilson he didn't overdo it. It's like a little bit, but like
you can tell when it was early in the production.
Yeah.
And late, like early in the production, he's like, all right, here comes my Woody Allen. And then later in the production, he's like, all right, I'm gonna do my version of Woody Allen.
You don't need an imitation. You just need to know that the guy is an artist. It's always semi-autobiographical. The guy is usually a writer, filmmaker, and like pretty neurotic. You know, he took out the Jewiness in this one. I can say this, folks, I'm Jewish.
There's always the opening credits is 20 minutes of clarinet.
Uh-huh. And seeing just a cityscape or actually just the credits itself. But yeah. This is Paris, man. This movie just sells. It is like the romanticism of Paris and the background. And, it, you know, Paris is the main star of this film, right? However, yeah. I want to say this now. This is for a Patreon. This is time travel adjacent. But if you watch the entire film, it's actually a time travel film.
Straight up.
It's a time travel. If they did not show the detective following him or like the diary that he gets in the future, in the present, then you would say they could have left it as a 12 monkeys, like, oh, is it in his mind or did it happen? And that's always fun to play with. But they did it. They say this happened.
They could have. Yeah. The last scene could have been him waking up and having breakfast. And we would have wondered the whole time.
Yeah.
What happened and what didn't happen.
But again, he's not going for the sci-fi. This is not for the time travel enthusiast. This is just using that.
But it is in a way. I mean, it's a causal loop.
Yeah. I mean, this is not going into any science. This is like romance, like comedy, pondering life, but they're not caring about what because he talked to the artist. He talked to the artist in the past and like affected what they've done. And
yeah,
there would be butterfly effects.
Now, do you feel like what's happened has happened has always happened? Do you feel like if he had found that diary a month earlier, his name would have been?
I don't think in this film that is supposed to be the thing. I think he went back in time and made some changes. I don't think this is going into that. I mean, I also think this is not a sci-fi focused film. They could care less about causal loops. He just needed it as a mechanism for nostalgia, for someone to come to terms with nostalgia and like, you know, what nostalgia is, you know, and
yeah,
and that it's just, it means you're not happy in the present. And it's at the end, there's a pretty basic concept to this film. Like you and I could do a plot rundown real quick on this.
This movie. Yeah. Which is why I'm going to keep on teasing it. This movie made some feels for Kelly and I.
Oh,
Will, our adopted nephew son, pines for the good old days. Like, just really is like literally in ways trying to figure out how to make the world go back. And like, Will's goal is to get a
time travel.
No, he's gonna bring it to us because he's accepted that time travel doesn't exist. So he wants to run for office and figure out how to make trains the primary form of travel in the United States again.
Uh-huh.
Like that's, and this person, by the way, he's going to college in Iowa and he is taking a train. We were about ready to buy him plane tickets and he talked us into getting it, which if he's got the time, we got the money. Yeah. I mean, it's cheaper. It's
I'm running fine. On a pedestal. More trains, less cars. We're bringing jazz back as the main music in the United States.
Oh, no.
States.
Jazz is way too cool. Big band, marching music, like pre-jazz music is what he's going for. And yeah, and he really like, so yeah, so this got Kelly, like we'll probably end up watching this movie again in the next month when he's home for the holidays. We're just going to be like, all right, we're doing this. Yeah. So what's your history? You went to movie school, so you probably have a little bit of an education in the Woody Allen theater.
Yeah. I mean, Annie Hall is the best. It is the rom-com that's made rom-coms. It's fantastic. Manhattan is also great. All, you know, he's a classic auteur. He marches the beat of his own drum, independent film. He does his own style. Very unique, very him, very New York. His films are just his film. You know, you can say like Scorsese's and Woody Allen's or like even Spike Lee's, like New York directors. Thank you. I'm from New York. You're welcome. They all have like their voice, right? Their unique feel. I think the great directors are very specific. Stanley Kubrick, although he's a whole other, Chris Nolan, which now has a very unique, right? They all have their thing and the way they do it, and they do it great.
Scott, you have just segued me into the movie I hope somebody makes in 2050. I'm hoping that somebody makes this movie called Midnight in Southern California. And he goes back to 1970 when all of the great directors you just mentioned are all hanging out in Southern California together, just chilling, smoking doobies, trading. I mean,
not the New York. These guys are like hardcore New Yorkers, the ones I mentioned.
But didn't, well, that's where they made their films, but didn't they?
No. Not, well, I mean,
Kubrick was an SC.
Oh, Kubrick. Sorry. Kubrick. Yeah. Kubrick. Yeah. If you want to do like Kubrick and like Spielberg and
Lucas.
Yeah. And what's his name? Coppola.
Coppola, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's the movie I want in 50 years. I want Midnight in SC.
Just talk to them about, yeah, like these young directors willing to kind of, yeah.
It is insane how these movements in history that we pine for, like the people that were all just chilling together.
Yeah.
Just like, we think of them as such individuals and like they were obviously running their own circle of friends.
Yeah. But for me, I mean, when Back to the Future came out, the 80s were so obsessed with the 50s. I don't know, but when I first watched that, I pined for the 50s. I wished I had been alive then. Like, somehow that all seemed really attractive to me. Now I was like, hell no. The fucking racism, homophobia, and sexism, and limited technology. And
they bring up the thing that I've heard other people bring up. I would never go to a time before penicillin.
Right.
And they mentioned that in this movie, which is brilliant.
Yeah, that's smart.
That's a very nervous Jewish thought.
So the version that I have for me with this, there was definitely a time where I idolized like the beat movement. And like, I, you know, in college, of course, I'm just this fucking kid in an upstate New York college. But I'm like, yeah, I want to be the modern day Jack Kerouac, as many people do. And I want to, and like, if I could time travel and hang with a crew like that, that would be that version for me. And of course, you think everybody was just best friends and they just, you know, things are spaced out over many years. But like, in my mind, it would be like that. I'd be walking around in San Francisco and be like, oh, hey, Kerouac. Hey, this is Neil Cassidy. Hey, have you met my friend Allen Ginsberg? We're going to go to a party with some girls and do some drugs. Okay. You know, that would be the version for me.
I remember the first time I ran across a Bukowski book.
Me too.
I was just like, whoa, this.
Are you like, that's the guy I want to hang out with?
I didn't necessarily want to hang out with him, but I was, you know, I thought of myself as quite a deep thinker and I liked to drink a lot. So, you know, there was definitely,
I kind of hated the world. I was grumpy. And so yeah. I thought I can relate to this.
I remember my slightly more educated girlfriend at the time just rolling her eyes. Just like,
yeah, everyone goes through Bukowski phase. It's fine.
She went through her Bukowski phase, you know, 5 years before I did.
So yeah. But she that's got so it. 5 years ago.
Yeah, totally.
So like if you had your chance, I'm doing this early, but like obviously, so for me, my version of Midnight in Paris would be like the Beat Poets. Would yours be USC 1970s?
I don't know. Cause like I remember, you know, digging through my dad's old records and loving them, but I really enjoyed them in my time.
Right.
Like I wasn't like listening to Steve Miller thinking like, oh, if only I could.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, if only I could go
I guess I'm not talking about the time. You're right. I'm not doing that thing. I'm just saying if you could go back and talk to inspirational artists that were in one time, one scene.
I guess it would have to be what we would call classic rock now sometime.
Yeah.
Like, but even like before that, like if I got the chance to go back in time and hang out with those people, I'd want to like, you know, hang out with them in high school when they're still just kind of like all that angst is just getting.
Hey, Robert Plant, you want to smoke a doobie?
Yeah, totally.
Hey, my friend Ozzy is going to come by later. We're going to, you can all hang out together.
Like, yeah, where was like Seattle in the 90s? Like that.
Oh, yeah, right. Ooh. That's a similar thing where you just picture they were like, if you walk around in a day, they're all hanging out together.
Just Nirvana and Pearl Jam just showing up at some shitty bar at the same time.
There's just one place you could go, one party that they would all be at.
I remember. I did see Eminem in a small club with not. I mean, it was packed, but even as it was packed, it couldn't fit that many people. So that was my I saw them before moment.
Yeah.
Like it was one of those concerts where like Eminem was already too big to play this place, but he had booked it before his album went through the roof. So he still came and did it, and D12 was there.
Wow.
As his hype men, and Obi opened up for him, and Pace One opened up for him, and yeah, and I think I got kicked in. He was still stage diving, like he was small enough to still stage dive without dying. So that's my I saw them before moment. But I forget where I was going.
We're talking about the idea of the going back, the nostalgia, and.
Oh, yeah. I it's so funny. I never really, like I said, I always enjoyed old stuff. I loved watching Nick at Night with my dad. I loved listening to classic rock. I think part of it for me was that my favorite radio station was a perfect mix of classic and contemporary rock. So it was like Led Zeppelin and then Pearl Jam and then Steve Miller Band and then Nirvana. So like I always kind of mingled it into the moment I was still living in. So I wasn't like, oh, I wish I could be, because I was kind of there for half of that movement. You know, I was there for the early 90s movement.
But like to like kids now, they're like, wow, you were around in the late 90s? 90s hip hop or like grunge in the 90s? And it's, you know, it's like how I used to look at like, yeah, I was obsessed as a teenager with like 50s music. And like, I would get the big compilations and wonder what, you know, I love Stand By Me. I was like, oh, what is it when you're just walking around and this song's on the radio and Run Around Sue and whatever. Yeah. I don't have that now.
I love the Family Guy thing where they're doing a Stand By Me thing. And like, hey, it's that thing that was just invented, but we still pine for the good old days of rock and roll.
Right. That's funny.
I remember one of the coolest concerts I ever saw was, or I mean, it was a great concert anyways, but just like I said, another being there moment. Was I saw Soundgarden in Seattle and what's his name? I can't think of the lead singer's name right now. He like
Chris Cornell
walked out on stage. He stuck his hand in his pocket and he said, it's been a long time since I've done a show with my own car keys in my pocket. Like, because he had been on a big tour and he was coming home to do a show. And that was just kind of a cool, like I said, just being there. So yeah, so this it's
I would say time travel wise, the method is like so random. It's not like anyone invented something. It's not even, it's supernatural esque, but it's like, why is it happening for this? Sorry, we're going to get really analytical, but like,
yeah.
Why is it happening for this guy? Just because he loves Paris and he's nostalgic, the universe provides a time travel vessel. At midnight, he's at a corner and a car goes by. And if he gets in the car, it takes him back to the heyday of Paris.
And people are like in it, like waving him.
Yeah, toward,
like, come on, man. Come on. Let's go. Let's go.
But like that is a time travel device that like it's not a portal that he found. It's not. It's specifically like made for him by some supernatural force that is real, apparently.
While he's getting in the time travel car from the 20s, you can see a 2010 BMW in the back. So like he has not yet time traveled, even though this time portal from the past. So I just want to say outright, this story is awesome. I really, really like this story. I like the outcome. I like the idea of it. I don't know if I like this movie scene by scene.
Oh, wow.
There's a lot of scenes where I was just exhausted and didn't care. But the overarching short story version of this is amazing.
Right. Plot is, here, I'm going to see how fast I can do this. Plot is, there's a guy who lives in the present. He's a filmmaker, but he wants to be a writer. He has a fiance who kind of clearly hates him. and he longs, they're in Paris visiting, and he longs for the days of Paris. She finds it annoying. She's got some friend who's kind of like douchey and spouts off all these facts. He doesn't go out with them one night when he's drunk, and he's sitting in a street, and a car comes up at midnight and takes him to old Paris. He meets all the great authors, poets, painters, sculptors. He comes back to the present. They don't believe him. He's becoming more disassociated from the present. She's getting on more with this other guy who's like a friend, who's like a very, who seems to know facts, but it's questionable. He's getting more and more into the past, and he's falling in love with this woman in the past. And at the end, he ends up realizing that his wife's been cheating and she's not right for him. And he breaks it off. But even in the past, this woman that he's in love with, she wants to go even further in the past. And he's starting to realize, oh, everyone, nostalgia is just like not being happy with your present. And it's not the way to do it. So he comes back to the present. He doesn't stay with her. He's not with the fiance, but he does decide to stay in Paris, which he loves so much. And some woman that he had been chatting up all along ends up being a spark of love. And there you go.
A woman who is running a shop must like, much like the shop
of antiques, right?
Of the book that he wants to write a book about. Does he call it a curiosity shop? What does he call it? He doesn't.
A nostalgia shop, right?
And yeah, he wants to write this. He's a screenwriter, but he wants to write this book about a guy who runs a nostalgia shop. And so he meets this woman who runs a nostalgia shop. But I just want to, not only does the girl from the past that he meets pine for the past of her own, they fucking go there.
Yeah.
This time machine is layered. So he's hanging out in the 20s with this woman who is pining for the 1850s or something.
Yeah, the Belle Epoque, which is like considered to them, to him, this is the classic age of all these painters and writers. And for them, they're like, no, Belle Epoque, that's when it was good. This is now is awful.
Yeah. So this horse and buggy comes up, which it's awesome because even the girl from the 1920s is like, that's old fashioned. So they get in this horse and buggy, go back to the 1850s, and then don't they go again?
No, she's going to stay there.
Or was it just the people that they're talking to in 1850s? Are they talking about a previous decade?
Oh yeah, I think they were. Yeah, there's always some previous decade. That's the lesson he learns with nostalgia, is like everyone in the time you romanticize, they're not happy at that time. They think of another time. You just glorify it once it's over.
Ugh.
That's what we do as people. I remember being like a 14-year-old and being like, oh man, when I was 12, that's when things were good and simple. I remember like the songs from that summer a year ago and how different I was. And like,
oh.
I was nostalgic at such a young age, which is so weird. But I also watched a lot of movies of people that were nostalgic.
I am definitely, like, it's funny that we talked about it a little bit and I was like, nah, I don't care. I am nostalgic about music now. Like not the music that's coming out now. I'm nostalgic for the music. I think whenever you graduated, I think that's the like the bullseye. Maybe if you went, I didn't go to college right after high school. So
yeah,
there might, you know, people might.
But still, the time period. No, it's all about the time period. And like there's people that say like whatever you were listening to in like your early 20s, whatever style you were wearing, mostly you just kind of stay with that.
Yeah.
Like even as you get to 30, you're like, I'm going to wear what I was wearing then. I'm just going to stop there. I'm going to keep my hat on backwards. I'm going to keep my flannels. On some level, you're like, okay, I'm not going to wear the hiking boots. I'm not going to cuff my jeans on the bottom, but you know.
But now we've lived long enough to where we know, put them in the back of the closet and wait 20 years.
Yeah, yeah. You see fashion repeating like a 20-year cycle.
Yeah, it's so weird to see, you know, because I always think that like the world has settled on an idea, but like we're kind of coming out of our 80s nostalgia.
Yeah, now we're in the 90s. Now we're in 90s nostalgia.
And now, sorry, I'm going to.
His camera's being a butthole camera. Hi, welcome to this episode of Butthole Camera. This week, a camera that just won't listen. So we haven't talked about whether we liked it. I guess you're saying that like you kind of like it, but you don't like it scene by scene. I like the film. I think it's the romanticism of Paris and the shots and in the rain. Like it's very watchable for me. I could watch this a lot. It's very easy time travel. It's very digestible.
The 90 minutes. I will watch this movie again just based on, if this was a 2-hour movie, I'd be like one and done. But it's just so weird that like it's such a random happenstance. Like you get the idea that this car comes along this street every night at midnight. And sometime there's someone there to get in and sometime there isn't. I mean, because like I said, time travel is a very real thing in this universe going back centuries, I guess, if you keep leapfrogging. But it was weird for me when it just became I kept waiting for him to go there and the car not to show up. And after a while, he just accepts, because it really, like I said, the way this movie, the way I felt it was chopped and screwed, it was like we would see a 90-second scene during the day with him and his wife. And then, boom, we'd be back at night. He'd be in the 20s for 5 minutes. And then, boom, we'd be back. He's waking up in the hotel with his wife.
Right. But it's done. It's less and less, right? You see he's more in the past. He's like, he's not going with them to anything. He's like, no, he's not coming to dinner. He's not going out. You just see in the present, but less and less.
And he is like getting advice from these people too. He is taking his book.
Yeah.
He's taking his book back. That woman, do you remember who was she?
Gertrude Stein.
Yeah. I didn't realize she was Oaklandish. Kelly looked her up. She was born in Oakland.
I did not know that. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So Scott is fall.
Oh, I love.
Who played Kathy Bates? Kathy Bates.
Sorry, yeah.
That was going to drive me nuts.
My favorite thing was when he talks to the surrealist and he's like, I'm a time traveler. And they had no time. They totally believed it. They didn't have any difficulty believing it at all. He's like, so I travel in time. They're like, so you're in person out of time. Like, I love this. Like Dolly. They're like, oh, yeah, you're a time traveler. That makes sense. Like,
He's wearing he's wearing a suit all the time. So even though it's made of fabric that hasn't been invented yet, he doesn't really stand out
too much. It doesn't fit in, hairstyle would have.
Yeah, that's true. That shaggy ass. Well, no, he's an artsy fartsy fucking Paris. Like,
Anyway, I love. Yeah, they don't care, but I love.
So yeah, so he's taking his book back and getting advice on how to write it from this woman who gave Hemingway. I got a hell of an education in this movie. Because I, like probably a lot of people, were like, well, these people all didn't like hang out in the same town at this. Like, these are such major players in literature through the world that, like, you know, one of them must have been a big deal in the late 1800s. And one of them was a big deal in the early 1900s. And another one, you know. So, it was funny, too. Like, he spoke, like, there's a time where he basically breaks the fourth wall. He doesn't, but for me, he did. When he gets back from his first night in the past and he lays down in bed in the present and goes, wow, I just hung out with Hemingway and Gertrude Stein. And he starts naming all these people while he's looking, while he's spiking the camera.
Yeah.
And like, I felt like that was just for me. Cause like, I was like, who the fuck? Like, he mentioned some of their names, but still I'm just like, no, these people didn't all exist at the same time in the same place.
Which is why, I mean, we're watching the film and you're just like, this is clearly, we're going to find out it's like a dream. He's nostalgic and he's delusional. We're going to find out at the end. But then the film says, no, this is a detective follows him and ends up in the past.
That's right. And how, so does the detective go to the time that he pines for?
No, he goes back even further. He's like,
No, but is that the time that the
No, I think the detective goes for another time. He's
I know, but is that the time that the detective pines for?
Oh, I don't think so. Isn't he running for his life from like Louis the 14th or something?
Why would he go there and not to the like, if a 1920s car picked him up, why would it take him back to the Napoleonic age?
It's curious. Yeah. They don't explain it. It's just like, you know, serving him right for spying on our hero.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And that would be what happens too. Like, you know, I would love to go back.
And how do they time travel again? Right. How do they time travel further in the past from the past when he's with, what's her name? When they go to Belle Epoque,
a horse and buggy.
I know, but just like, they don't control just because they want to, like,
well, because she's, yeah. Well, that's why I think that the detective went back to his pining era. I think it's kind of magical that way, where it's like, you know, if Owen Wilson would have been like, I want to go back to, you know, World War I when America was great, you know, then maybe he would have gone back. Like, this made the most sense because then you could create an actual vehicle from that time.
Yeah.
And, you know, like how you get back to, you know, where the detective went to, like what form of travel, like.
Oh, yeah. How does he get back? Does he just go when he comes back from his past? How does he get to the future? Does he just walk to his hotel and he goes to bed and it's there? Like, how does it, does he always have to take the car back?
Have you seen Barbie?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like Barbie. You got to do it all in reverse.
They didn't cover that in the film, do they?
Barbie?
He just wakes up the next day. In this film, how he gets back to his present.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I think that's another thing that can be, well, because the first time he goes back, he simply just walks away from the bar.
Yeah.
And then walks back.
And finds his hotel and goes to bed.
No, and it's a laundromat.
Oh, that's right.
So, I guess when he was done, I think I like to imagine it's like Barbie. You got to do the whole series in which we will do Barbie on this show at some point, people.
Or like 6 a.m. at like 6 a.m. it resets.
I would believe you. I would believe you if the laundromat didn't appear as if from nowhere. Like I could see from midnight to six.
Again, yeah. This is not one that we need to critique the science of it, but you know, we can say the only two pieces of evidence that show that he was actually time traveling is that in the present, he's in the antique shop run by the woman that's going to be his lady. And in the diary,
the diary shows him in the past. It's a different nostalgia shop.
He's
at some bazaar.
Okay. And he just happens to see the journal of Adriana.
Yeah.
And it mentions her falling in love with him in the past. And so there's that. And the fact that the detective who follows him never comes back and gets lost in the past. So they're showing that to us as the film. So we are taking that as real. So it establishes that he actually time traveled.
Yeah.
But besides that, there's no other wrinkle. There's no other evidence.
And to continue with the causal loop. So he reads in the diary that he gave her earrings and made love to her. And so then he...
But he never made love to her, right?
I don't...
No.
I guess he didn't. He did get... Did he finally give her a pair of earrings, though?
It's not a loop. It's just that, I guess, it's... He did give her earrings.
See, I feel like that's almost like part of it. Like, I feel like there's a sex scene that they...
Right, they wanted to make it more innocent.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to stay together or something.
Like, there's definitely, like, a content warning in the beginning that makes it look like you're going to see, like, a softcore porn. I just wanted to see if I can find a list of all the people we run into.
Yeah. Oh, all the artists.
Yeah. John Carroll.
Dali.
John Cocteau, Zelda Fitzgerald, Ernest Hemingway, Juan Belmont, Zelda and Scott, Gertrude Stein, Pablo Picasso,
Buñuel,
Amadeo Modigliani. I'm sorry, everyone.
Modigliani.
There you go. Thank you, Scott. Georges Broch, Salvador Dali, Man Ray, Louis Buñuel.
Yeah.
Mont Saint Michael.
Oh, and what's his name?
Belle Époque, Henri de Toulouse-Lautrec.
Yeah.
Paul Gauguin, Edgar Degas.
Yeah. Toulouse is drinking the absinthe, right? At the table.
Yeah. I loved it too.
Just taking shots of absinthe.
Oh, I kept waiting for drugs to come into this too, because maybe that's why he's time traveling. But the only, like, besides, you know, the people drinking cocaine in the good old days, he just goes, "Where I come from, people measure their success in Coke spoons." Did you catch that line?
I missed that line. No,
it's ADR, like one of the later times when he's getting in the car. And I don't think we ever find out who's in the car with him at this time. He just goes, "Wow, where I come from, people measure their success in Coke spoons." It's like, oh, okay.
Wow.
God bless Hollywood in 2011.
Yep.
Wow. So, Cole Porter.
Oh, yep.
Josephine Baker.
Yeah, like everything is so, you know, we just go out and it has to be Josephine Baker's there. And like Cole Porter happens to be playing. Everyone's just connected in the same like night. It's perfect.
T.S. Eliot, Leo Stein. Yeah, just two people as party goers. Yeah, and the whole time his wife is hanging out. So they're in Paris with his fiance's parents. And then in the first dinner they're there, which I'd never actually looked up the definition of pedantic. That is my new favorite word. Like,
yeah,
you know, I've heard it. When you hear it in context, it makes sense. So I've never actually,
but it's hard to define it.
Looked up pedantic. And so, and the best part too. So they're approached at dinner by this other couple who knows them from America, and his fiance and this guy are obviously kind of into each other. Like it's kind of vague at the end. Whether or not I don't think they did actually hook up, but you know, it's possible. But the best part is, so at one of his trips back to the 20s, he sees Picasso painting. Oh, I'm right there at this part of the movie too. I love it when I do this. Painting this picture of this woman, and it's a very surreal picture. It doesn't look like a woman at all.
Yeah.
But he's actually in the past when they're discussing what he was going through as he painted this picture of her. And so then back in the future, Paul is pedantically going over this picture. And Owen Wilson just transcribes what he literally heard the artist say from the past. And they're all just kind of like, what the fuck is all that?
But using the past to one-up him of actual information. So that's, using some time travel. This is a fun film. This is a nice, easygoing time travel. But again, I don't know if this is adjacent. This started as adjacent for us, but this is it's time travel, friend. It's like more time travel than some time travel films.
Totally. There are some movies we've done that are less than this. But this is just, hey, for all you people out there, you know what? If you put it on our list, we'll watch it. Like, come on.
We got no stint. They're like, Caligula, that's time travel.
Fuck it. You know what? If you guys want to hear us talk about it, that's what we want to talk about.
All right, Caligula next week. I like the part where he shot a load over his own stomach. I thought that was really important to the overall overarching theme.
I enjoyed that they let the camera linger until it curdled.
Yeah.
That was nice. All right, I have not looked at my notes once, so I'm going to, no cell phones. That's very convenient for this story told in 2011.
Yeah.
Cell phones would have ruined most of this plot.
Well, cell phones were out in 2011.
That's what I'm saying. And nobody in this movie has one.
Oh yeah. Good on you, Woody. Make it more of a timeless film.
Yeah. I love it early along. I'm taking lots of notes so I can try to figure out if this is time travel or not. And then I'm just like, oh, never mind. The first sentence, I of course can't remember it right now, but the first sentence of his book, when Gertrude Stein reads that out loud, is the synopsis of this whole movie.
Yeah.
That was kind of, there's definitely some, and I don't know any of these artists well enough to know if, I assume, well, as best we can quote them, that's something else too. Like, everything we know about these people is what's been passed down. That's another thing that he mentions too. Like, in the future, it's assumed that these relationships between Hemingway and these girls was a certain way. But him actually being there, he knows what the real relationship is, which, is a good thing to remember about our, when they like Einstein has all these quotes attached to him.
Yeah.
There have been studies that most likely he didn't say all of those things, but it's impossible for the human mind to remember the 100 people that said those 100 interesting things.
Right.
So as we've gone down, they've just been like, you know what? Thomas Jefferson said all this. Like, we're not going to dig up every forefather that said this. And I think that's something that they kind of touch on in this. Like, it's, you guys are right, but not exact. And we can't, assume that Hemingway was always the genius he was, made out to be right now. Oh, my new favorite song ever, the Do It song. Bees do it.
Oh, uh-huh.
Birds do it.
Let's do it. Let's fall in love. Yeah.
Everyone,
that's
stay.
How you snuck that in back in the day.
Stay tuned. That will be in the outro. The Do It song will be there because it is amazing. The fiance and her family was weird. That was like, that felt like padding to me almost. Like, I don't know if they just wanted to really like accentuate that he's going to be fine without, because Rachel McAdams, she's kind of, rude to Owen Wilson, but Owen Wilson is also an impossible man to live with. So you can kind of how exhausting would that be to live in? Someone just talking about walking in the rain in Paris all the time.
What's wrong with that?
Just, it's fine, but just get over it and have lunch.
Wow.
We still,
she's
no
like
matter,
Paris in the rain, whatever.
No matter how much you pine for the past, at some moment we have to exist in the now.
I can't believe you're siding with her. Yeah, she's very cute.
She's okay. Her family is the worst. Like,
yeah,
the mom, just like the second the earrings are gone, they're stolen. It was the maid. It's always the maid. Like, call the house detective. What hotel has a house within within 2 minutes? They call the house doctor and the house detective to the hotel room. I guess. Is that a Parisian thing? Like, am I just ignorant of European customs? Whatever.
Yes.
So now is time is consistent in the past and the present, right? Like a minute in the 20s is a minute now.
Yeah, I think so.
I guess, yeah, I don't know why I just, because I'm just kind of going through my notes. All right, Scott, I guess we already kind of talked about this. So what kind of car would pick you up and take you to your pining days?
What years are those? Those are late 50s, early 60s.
Yeah.
It's probably like some old like Ford convertible, I would think.
How about a Corvette with the red and white Corvette?
That seems out of time. Well, you sure? I'm going to look this up. Oh, no. The book came out in 57.
There you go. Right there, Scott.
Oh, yep. That's it. Okay.
That's your 19th. That's the one.
That's delightful.
Yeah. Mine would be, let me see if I'm going back.
So, yeah, I'm going to 57 to 60.
Oh, fuck yeah. There's my 1960s Lincoln Continental.
There. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yep.
Fuck yeah. That's what daddy
sold.
Look at that trunk. Look at, you could fit, you could sneak your whole band into a drive-in in that trunk. That is crazy. Why did anyone ever build a car with that much trunk? That's insane. That's,
I don't know, a, why
that's
size...
a mafia car. That's a mafia car. Like they, unless you're moving dead bodies across the state line, there's no reason for a trunk that big.
Absolutely.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thank you, Scott.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brendan. Thank you all patrons for, oh, what time is it?
Oh yeah. Mm.
I'm not going to look at our old ones.
It's tough. I need to almost like for like to know like what it's better than or worse than.
We'll do a, so the next time we do a top whatever, our 20 through 30 or whatever, we'll, or maybe is what we'll do is we'll, I don't know. The next time we have a general discussion, I'm just going to whip out the ratings.
Yeah.
And anything that lines.
We can adjust.
Anything that lines up, we got to decide, okay, which one's better? You put them both 10 o'clock. Yeah. One of them's got to be better.
So, you know, I don't see this as any kind of essential time travel film in any way, but I find it charming. I love the nostalgia of old Paris. I like, it's easily watchable. It's fun. What does that get with me?
Yeah.
Does that get like a 7.45?
We'll let you think about that. I'm going, this movie has really grown on me in the last, I watched this last night with Kelly. I don't watch a lot of these movies with Kelly, but this was such a random one.
Yeah.
That I was just like, you want to watch this one? This movie is, like I said, the story is really interesting to me. I love the idea that like everyone wishes for a time, so we have to accept what now. You know, I'm getting into my middle age. You know, I'm hitting that midlife crisis.
Getting.
I'm you know, I'm about ready to, you know, grow my hair out and buy a Corvette and start whistling at high school girls.
Oh, like no, a, ponytail man, not ponytail like man. True.
So like, you know, and this movie has a good point. It's as historically accurate as any movie can be. You know, we've talked about the fact that history is not, you know, history was written by the winners, so we can't trust it. But other than that, I think there's some fairly accuracy here. It's 90 minutes. That increases the watchability tenfold for me. I'm going 9:15.
Whoa, you go 9:15? We were talking about this. You were like, I don't like this film. It's like cut up. I don't like it in pieces. And somehow, all right, no, then I'm going up. I'm not, yeah, I like this film more than you do. So I'm not, I'm going to do 9:20.
Whoa. I was kind of joking when I was like, let's see what Scott does after I talk. But Scott's going for the spike. He's like, no.
I like
no.
this film better than you. No, no.
Now I wish I had made it at 11 o'clock just to see how high.
I wouldn't go that far. No. It's a fun film. But again, because we're not saying top time travel film. It's, you know.
Yeah, this is just a movie that
it's a fun film. Yeah,
I like. I would watch again. It's got a good. Wow, I can't. Oh, I'm already excited for this.
This is like The Price is Right when someone like goes a dollar more.
Totally. 9:46. 9:47. Oh.
When the little bluebird, who has never said a word, starts to sing, spring, spring. When the little bluebell in the bottom bottom of the dell starts to ring ding ding. When the little blue clerk in the middle of his work starts a tune to the moon up above, it is nature, that's all, simply telling us to fall in love. And that's why birds do it, bees do it, even educated fleas do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love. In Spain, the best upper sets do it. Lithuanians and let's do it, let's do it, let's fall in love. The Dutch in old Amsterdam do it, not to mention the Finns. Folks in Siam do it, think of Siamese twins. Some Argentines without means do it. People say in Boston even beans do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love. Romantic sponges, they say, do it. Oysters down in Oyster Bay do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love. Cold Cape Cod clams, against their wish, do it. Even lazy jellyfish do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love. Electric eels, I might add, do it, though it shocks them, I know. Why ask if shad do it? Waiter, bring me shad roe. In shallow shoals, English souls do it. Goldfish in the privacy of bowls do it. Let's do it, let's fall in love.
When I was a young boy, time traveling wasn't something I thought I would get into.
That's my Morgan Freeman. You're welcome.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.